This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice will testify in public and under oath before the 9/11 Commission. After resisting the Commission's unanimous invitation as a matter of constitutional principle, the Bush administration changed tack earlier today. In another White House concession, President Bush and Vice President Cheney will now appear together at a closed-door meeting with all 10 commissioners present. For its part, the Commission has agreed to stipulate in writing that Rice's appearance does not establish a precedent and that it will seek no further public testimony from any White House official. Later in the program, we'll switch focus to the political and philosophical controversies over laws to protect the fetus, including a measure just passed by Congress. But first, the controversy on 9/11 testimony. The administration reversal was announced by White House spokesman Scott McClellan aboard Air Force One while the president was en route to an appearance in Wisconsin today. NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne joins us now from Appleton, Wisconsin. Don, good to talk to you.
Hi there.
Don, review with us exactly what it is that the White House has agreed to.
They have agreed to allow Condoleezza Rice, the National Security to not just meet with the commission. She's met with them in the past and had offered to meet with them again, but meet with them in public session under oath. It will be official testimony. And that is a very significant and surprising reversal of what was a very firm White House position just up until yesterday, even.
But did they explain why they changed their mind?
Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary on Air Force One today, said that the president started looking for some sort of a compromise, some sort of a way to allow Dr. Rice to meet with the commission that would satisfy everyone. Over the weekend, he started looking at that. And McClellan said that the president's concern was that all of the news coverage of this, all of the talk about this, was about process. And it was not about the substance of the 9/11 Commission and the work they're doing and the kind of information that the White House has already shared with them. They stressed that they've already shared millions of documents and spent many hours talking with them, but they felt that this debate over executive privilege and the separation of powers had really kind of bogged things down in the minutiae. So they wanted to find some sort of a breakthrough, and here we have it.
The point of principle, as you just reminded us, was a separation of powers. The White House arguing that the president's advisor should not be asked to testify in public under oath to a creature of Congress, which is how they view the 9/11 Commission.
Exactly. Unlike, say, the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense, those are positions that are approved by Congress, and they can be compelled to come and testify. Not so, the White House has argued, an advisor to the president, which is what the National Security Advisor is. And they have made the commission put in writing that this will not set a precedent, that this will not be used as a justification for some future National Security Advisor or other presidential advisor to be dragged before Congress to talk about some other matter unforeseen at this moment down the road.
And the other thing, of course, is that the commission will seek no further public testimony from any White House official, including Dr. Rice.
Right. And the White House stresses this is not limiting the testimony. They say Dr. Rice was the point person on this at the White House. She should answer questions in addition to, again, the millions of documents they say they have already turned over.
Now, the agreement announced today also covers appearances by President Bush and Vice President Cheney. President Bush had already agreed to appear in private before the commission, again, not under oath, but only with a couple of commissioners present.
Right. This will still be in private, not official testimony by a president of the United States. But the main complaint from the commission was that access to the president was being limited, that it would just be the two chairs there. Now, all of the members will be present. The catch, though, is we have not heard from the White House that this session will be expanded beyond the 1 hour that had been promised. And if it does remain an hour, you'll have both the vice president and the president sharing an hour, so it's not clear exactly how many questions will be asked. It's not like when the president is there, the commissioners will interrupt him in mid-sentence and say, whoa, wait a minute, let me ask you more about that. the president will speak until he's finished, and then politely will come the follow-up. So it could be a very, very brief hour.
Now, has any date been set for either of these sessions, or the ones with the National Security Advisor or the president and vice president?
No dates at all yet, according to Scott McClellan, though we expect them to be relatively soon. The commission has to get a final report out by the end of July. So I'm sure they're comparing calendars as we speak, but we don't know when it will be.
As to the White House explanation as to why this decision was made, as you said, up until now, this has been a very firm position of principle, really. All of this, of course, follows the testimony of Richard Clark, the former White House counterterrorism chief. Last week, that's really set the whole agenda here, hasn't it?
The White House would have you believe that this decision had nothing to do with Richard Clark or any of the controversy that has swirled around this in the last week or so, and about the administration's behavior in terms of confronted the terrorist threat prior to 9/11. But there was tremendous pressure building, and that is the only way to explain this kind of a sudden reversal. The president has been going out giving speeches about other topics, and nobody has paid attention to those because of the focus on the 9/11 commission and whether Dr. Rice will testify and what Richard Clark said. The president talked about housing last week and the economy last week. He was coming here to Appleton, Wisconsin today to talk about the economy, and nobody was really focusing on what he was going to be saying in those places. This, in some ways, creates the impression that that the president has been trying to change the subject away from the 9/11 commission to issues like the economy, all the while facing protesters in a state like this, Wisconsin, the town of Appleton, which is home to Harry Houdini, of all people. And you've got the protesters holding signs talking about the magical disappearance of thousands of manufacturing jobs. And it seemed the president was trying to actually being forced to change the subject to a topic that isn't very pleasant for him either. This, the White House hopes, will kind of get things back on a normal footing and quell the controversy a bit.
Don, thanks for talking with us. And of course, we apologize to listeners for those little digital glitches that we heard in your report. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
NPR White House correspondent Don Gagne joins us from Appleton, Wisconsin. And here with us in Studio 3A is John Harwood. He's political editor at The Wall Street Journal. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for having me.
And first off, the White House explanation. This, of course, has absolutely nothing to do with Richard Clark's testimony last week.
Well, of course it does. This is a complete capitulation by the White House, which was, as Don indicated, making a stand on principle. I don't think the White House really had anything to gain by withholding Condoleezza Rice's testimony. I think this president believes that he needs to stand up against the erosion of executive power. It's something that was a theme of his father's presidency, and he has struck that theme since the beginning. But they were getting hammered on this issue. Richard Clark was the beginning of it, but the story was not going away, and it is not the conversation that this White House wants to be having. They want to be able to dispose of this issue and get on to other things that they want to talk about in the campaign.
So from what you're saying, is their point on executive privilege and separation of powers perfectly legitimate?
I think it is a point that they believe in. There, you can get legal scholars on both sides of it as to whether or not this commission is sui generis, and therefore the legal strictures about aides in the executive branch not going before a legislative body may or may not apply. You get differences of opinion, but I do think that that is a sincerely held principle by the White House. Condoleezza Rice was talking to everyone and his brother in a public interview setting and had talked to the commission, so I don't really think it was about withholding the information itself. I think it was about vindicating that principle, but in the end, you got to weigh costs and benefits, and the costs of holding her back were simply getting too high in these daily headlines and stories on the network news.
And we saw even Republican members of the commission, John Layman, the former Secretary of the Navy, comes to mind, saying, this is a unanimous invitation to Condoleezza Rice to come and testify, because, for one thing, she's so good at explaining her position.
John Layman said over the weekend this was a political blunder of the first order. Every Republican on the commission wanted her to testify. You had Tom Kaine, the chairman, saying she ought to. He wanted to get her under oath. In the end, the White House just found that too difficult to sustain a different position, especially after Richard Clark had really initiated a major attack on the White House.
Let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Darren joins us on the line from Anderson, Indiana.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm glad your guest just pointed that out, because I was going to say something about the Republicans, and also Karen Hughes was on television last night saying that she thought that Condoleezza Rice should testify.
And that should have been the big tip-off.
Yeah. So
if Karen Hughes thinks it's a good idea, it's likely to happen.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the 9/11 Commission was presidentially appointed. Is that correct? Or because it seems to me that Bush's defense of this as separation between branches and executive privilege, I'm not sure that washes, because if it's true that the president appointed the 9/11 Commission, then how was it a conflict of interest for her to testify if he appointed the commission? And
so in what way is it a creature of Congress, I guess is the question.
Yeah. I believe the commission was created by an act of Congress, and that's what the administration would argue.
I know initially he said, President Bush said he was going to appoint the people himself. Did he do that? Is that how it happened? And then Congress approved them, or?
I think the commission was created by an act of Congress, and there was joint appointment of members with the executive and the Congress.
Because they had to get Democratic members appointed as well. Obviously, the president doesn't get to choose them. Darren, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks. I also was wondering if this letter of cooperation, this agreement that they signed, that this would not set a precedent in the future, I was wondering how realistic is that, I mean, yeah, they can agree to that now, but how realistic is it that it won't be used as a precedent in the future?
Well, I guess that's sort of unanswerable. I would guess that Governor Kaine would be prohibited from using it as a precedent in the future. But
you did have
else.
The House Speaker, Denny Hastert, and the Senate Majority Leader, Bill Frist, themselves saying that the Congress would not regard this as a precedent. But all this stuff is a little bit loose and depending on the circumstances at the time in the future.
Now, the president did not want this commission appointed in the first place. Then he more recently opposed its the extension of its life by a month, which would put its report right into the prime time election season. It would be reporting at the end of July during the Democratic National Convention. And now this controversy, this entire commission has not been very good to the administration.
No, and the circumstances we're in now are certainly causing people within the White House who opposed both the creation and the extension of the commission's mandate to feel vindicated. This is precisely the set of problems that could end up engulfing a current administration, and it's clearly a problem for the White House. We don't know if it's going to persist all the way through the election season. They are going to report this summer. But, you know, this is not the conversation the White House wants to be having, focused on what they did or didn't do in the months before 9/11. And then you have this added issue that Richard Clark has put at the center of the table, which is, were they obsessed with Iraq in a way that caused them to divert from really the core war on terrorism after 9/11 and take it off in a different direction? That is an argument that a lot of Democrats are making, and Richard Clark is echoing.
And briefly, doesn't it also speak to the power of the commission itself and behind them, the power of the families of the victims?
Absolutely. And ultimately, that power derives from from what the American people felt on 9/11. You know, there are assets and liabilities from that. The president in his election campaign is trying to take the American electorate back to how they felt after 9/11, when they decided collectively that he was leading them in a way that they approved of. His approval went up to record levels. But now you've got the sort of whipsawing emotions of these families, that the more they learn about what happened and what didn't happen, they're on all sides of it. Some of the victims' families are supportive of the president, some are opposed, and that creates some cross currents that are troublesome for the administration.
John Harwood, thanks very much.
You bet.
John Harwood is political editor at The Wall Street Journal. He joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from the break, we'll talk with health policy correspondent Julie Rovner about last week's passage of the Federal Unborn Victims Act and how it compares to similar state laws and how all of them fit into the abortion debate. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.